Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
WGN. Good music to bump us in with, Tom Hush, John Hanson, Esmeralda Leon, filling in for Justin Coffin here on the second half of the download. You're really grooving to this, Esmeralda.
I want to walk down the street like...
like 70s, 80s sitcom style to this?
Yeah, or like a 70s R. Crumb cartoon.
Yeah.
Where it's like... and then the trees are waving in front of me like, hi.
So basically you want to get stoned and walk down the street is what you're telling me.
I would be high on life.
312-91-7200. Thank you so much for joining us here this evening. I'm so excited to see Esmeralda because you and I have not hosted together for a little while.
I know you went jet setting.
Yeah, I went. Yeah, we talked right before I went on a vacation to Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Then I went on another one to Iceland, which inspired you to go to Iceland.
Sure.
Coming up in October. Uh-huh. And I hosted with Michael Heidemann once, and you did a solo show, which was awesome. And here we are together again. It's the end of the summer. Do you get caught up in the whole end of summer thing? I never see like Labor Day really is the end of summer because it's still warm out.
No, because it'll still, although it is going to get cold this week.
Yeah.
But no, I don't, you know what? Whatever. Watch, it's going to be 90 degrees next week.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter.
You can still go to the beach.
Exactly. Right? I don't even like going to the beach when it's warm.
No. No,
I go when it's freezing, and then I just stick my toe in, and they go, boo, let's go.
Right. I think ever since I'm not a kid anymore, like, the end of summer doesn't really mean that much to me anymore.
Right, because
I don't
school starts, at least for CPS, tomorrow.
Because it'll work the whole damn summer anyways. Like, it wasn't like we got reprieve. I mean, I took some time off in the summer. I went to a lake house.
We're adults. We can take vacations whenever we please.
Yeah, for sure. We got a text, Red Moon, and I wanted to... that's a very brief text.
Oh, is there a red moon?
Well, it's because of all these wildfires. We're seeing a lot of the haze. I can't see the moon right now here.
Wait, the red moon is because of the fires?
I don't know. I would assume so, right? So there's a haze in the air. Yeah, there's a haze in the air.
Which would make it red?
Well, which made the sun really red, and I imagine if it's the sun still broken down over the horizon, it would project onto the moon. Man, I'm really talking out of my...
I don't know.
I don't know either.
What?
Elaborate,
true,
Red Moon. Right.
If that is true, that sounds frightening.
That's my guess, is that it's the haze from the smoke of the wildfires. You could definitely see it. I saw Tom Skilling posting about it at sunset. If you've noticed, the sunsets have been very hazy.
I could understand, the haze because of that, but not to make the moon red.
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Someone should enlighten us on
this. It sounds like a horror movie.
312-981-7200. I hope you've had a great Labor Day. I know a lot of you probably were working, like Esmeralda and I, on the Labor Day. But if you had it off, I hope you enjoyed it. Many of you are probably traveling back from Southwest Michigan or Northwest Indiana or Wisconsin after the long weekend. So feel free to chime on in with where you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, and drive safe.
Yeah, for sure. If you did enjoy the day today and you had it off, you had a barbecue or something, you can really thank Chicago workers about a century and a little more than a century ago for that.
Really?
The history of Labor Day is fascinating, and a lot of it is what took place in Chicago. And we're going to talk to a professor about that, a history professor, a noted labor history professor, about how Chicago in the 1850s through the 1890s really was the hotbed, or one of the hotbeds in our country, of the rise of the labor movement. And
so another reason why Chicago is the greatest city.
We got you an extra day off in September. Well, it's like often like the forgotten holiday. I think we all take time on Memorial Day to honor those armed service members who we lost, and that's of course what you should do. And on Veterans Day, we remember all the veterans. 4th of July, we talk about the history of the country, of course. Each holiday sort of has this, Christmas obviously, birth of Jesus, like there's things. And then Labor Day is kind of just the day we're like, get off.
It's the day of labor.
Working,
that's all people usually know.
Yeah. Working's the worst. I'm so glad we don't have to do it today.
Yeah, let's take a day off.
But there was a lot of, I mean, we joke about it, but I mean, a lot of people died to get the rights that we have these days in terms of the 5-day week and the 40-hour work week and the minimum wage. And it was interesting. We're going to have this conversation on the backdrop of the Fight for 15 rallies, which were happening all morning today.
Yeah, there's a lot of protests today, which is, you know, rightly so.
Right. Other things that we'll probably touch base on, and I wanted to get this conversation going, is we're still, the last time I was on actually was the day that Hurricane Harvey made landfall that night. I think everyone knew it was going to be a severe storm, catastrophic perhaps, but I don't think anyone, I don't know. I don't know if anyone could really have anticipated. I mean, they were calling for 40-some inches of rain, so I guess this is what happens. But just the fact that it just parked on Houston and really devastated so many communities. And now we're hearing stories. There's great stories of bravery and rescue. There's also stories that are not so great of rent landlords still charging rent to a lot of people that apartments have been basically destroyed. And I say basically because there's a fine line between basically destroyed and completely destroyed. And that's how some landlords are getting away with charging rent.
Right. And that's ridiculous.
It is kind of ridiculous.
Insane.
If my apartment halfway burns down tonight, but I can still technically walk in the door, I ain't paying rent.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to do with like Texas law versus other state laws
right.
as well.
I
so,
mean, if I something goes awry in my apartment, I start to threaten with not paying rent.
Right.
I get real like, and I'm like, you know what? That's not working. It should work. I'm not paying you rent.
Exactly.
So the fact that these places are pretty much under submerged
right.
in water and completely destroyed, I'm amazed that landlords have the gall to start asking for rent.
We're really fighting the man today, by the way.
We are.
We're talking about Labor Day. And
how very centric of
it. Right.
How very Labor Day centric.
Exactly. And fighting the man, the landlord.
Yeah.
And we got a text from the 630. I just looked at the moon. It's red all right. We should probably look this up during the commercial break.
So it's just red. I mean, yeah, we should find
out. There's a reason why it's red. I'm sure it has to do with the haze and the smoke from the fires. That's my guess. What's your
okay.
guess, Esmeralda? Out of the blue, what's your guess here?
Probably light fractures of light hitting
mm-hmm.
the moon off of our eyes. And then the color looks red, but it's really not.
Yeah. Maybe. So you think it's an illusion.
And the oceans.
Oh, and the oceans.
Oceans.
Something with the oceans. And
something
the
with oceans.
The refraction of
no,
light.
No, I've seen when it has been like a blood red moon or whatever. And it,
right.
is frightening.
It is a little
and
creepy.
And when it gets really big, oh. It looks like it's about to fall on something. No, thank you.
I think it's safe up there.
Yeah.
So 312-981-7200, talk about the moon, talk about rent, whatever you want to talk about. We're going to continue the conversation after this on 720 WGN. WGN, John Hansen and Esmeralda Leon filling
Hello.
In for Justin Kaufman here on the second half of the download. I imagine Justin's back tomorrow.
Should
have known the answer before
I know,
went
right?
half-formed into that thought. Everyone's talking about the red moon on Twitter, and we're getting some pictures of it. Man, that thing is red.
I am frightened.
That really
that
worries you?
That thing is scary. Look at it. There is a picture from the 815, the moon
yeah.
view from Shorewood. That thing looks, no.
Yeah, it looks
there
like
is,
Mars.
There's
look.
Some frightening things going on.
630 says, saw the red moon, very cool, could smell the smoke. Thanks for mentioning it. It all makes sense now. And I've been going through Twitter, which, of course, is never the best way to do research in this stuff.
Right.
But we have a tweet that says, it's because of atmospheric dust from the wildfires in Montana and Canada.
See, that's, I don't get that.
Why won't you? So, okay.
But why would it turn it red?
Well, let me explain a little bit. Is that the dust, I imagine, is imagine the sun has set off the west.
Mm-hmm.
So the sun... The sun is shooting off the moon from the west, right? And,
mm.
and
I still, mm.
the dust from, yeah, makes sense to me.
Does it light fractures?
We got to get Skilling on for
is
this.
Is it light fractures?
I don't know if it is. Is Skilling working? He's probably on air tonight.
I think he is working. He's probably telling us right now on Channel 9.
No.
We're busy here
we
trying to
just
explain
turn on
ourselves.
Channel 9 and let Skilling tell us. But he did post about an hour ago, mammoth wildfires in the west are behind our smoky-looking red and orange-hued sunsets. So many of you have taken time to send us photos of the evening's red-hued sunsets and to inquire what's going on. So there's some stunning animations that Tom has on his page of the newest weather satellite that shows this smoke going through the area. So it looks like cloud cover kind of on the satellite, like cloud cover, but it's actually smoke from the wildfires.
Okay, well, there's also a Blood Moon Prophecy.
Which is what?
Which is a series of apocalyptic beliefs. So I'm going to go with that one.
What do they believe? What do they believe it is?
Probably that we're going to all die.
You think that's going to happen tonight?
Let's hope not. After 11.
You know, there's so much bad crap
happening. We're still
happening.
On.
Well, I'd rather be on the air when it all ends than
could
at
you
home.
Imagine? Oh, man.
At least we could talk about it.
That's
the
true.
End of
we would
the
have
end of time.
So much to chat about at the end.
If the apocalypse was happening, and we're in the Showcase studio, so we got a great view of it.
Oh, man. We
could tell you everything that was happening near the river and down Michigan Avenue. That's way better than being in bed.
right?
We'd be the last people on WGN.
Oh, and then we could, and then we would grab some of those mics that you can take, like man on the street mics,
mm-hmm.
and then we would just run around and save the planet.
Yeah,
and that's what I assume would happen.
At that point, I'd hope it happened before Patty came on because I'd want to be the last ones.
We're so selfish. We're like, the world is ending. We want to be the last ones.
I'm just saying. So if you see the blood moon or red moon tonight, or if you have any answers on that, 312-981-7200. That's what we think.
And dust.
I mean, Skilling was talking about the sunsets being that's why it's red and orange, and that's what I was referring to. But I don't know if that's exactly what's causing the moon.
Does this help at all? That not help, but I was reading an article about how scientists found a black hole near the Milky Way.
Yeah, what's that about?
It's a black hole. It's like a black hole that they only theorized.
I don't think that has
they
anything.
They just thought it exists, and now they're like, wait, we think it actually does.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to, like, suck us up or anything.
No, I don't think that has.
But it's there.
Right. I don't think that has anything to do
Let's
with the red
not.
Moon. Right. Black holes and red moons. So you were kind of amazed. Before we went on the air, and again, feel mm-hmm. free to chime in, 312-91-7200.
Oh, yeah, I need to take a picture of this one.
So we were talking earlier about drinking water out of the... I'm kind of curious if everyone else is the same way as this, because a lot of people are.
Well, what happened was Tom Hush, mm-hmm. our producer, Tom Hush, he was he had a cup of water, and mm-hmm. I just went, I'm like, where'd you get that water?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, from the faucet.
Okay.
And I went, what, in the bathroom? He said, yes, with no sign of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just contorted my face in disgust. And then, yeah, that's where it went.
Yeah,
I don't drink out of the bathroom sink. What's wrong with you?
It's the exact. It's the same pipes that go to the kitchen sink. So, but you will drink out of the kitchen sink. So it's not all tap water.
No, I drink out of the kitchen sink because I'm fine with Chicago water. My mother. Oh no, you give her Chicago water. She thinks it smells and tastes like bleach. And they have because they have the fancy filtered water.
But what does it matter which faucet it's out of?
I don't know.
Is it because it's so close to where you do your business?
I guess so, because even when I'm brushing my teeth, I dare not swallow any of that water.
Really?
I don't know why. It's just in my head.
So why do you wash your hands there? Like, if
it's there's soap.
I know, but like, the water's still good.
Mm-hmm.
I know. It's not potable water. I mean, it is. It is potable water.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, not for me.
I think you need to open your mind to some water drinking possibilities. There's such a
bathroom sink drink. What about the tub? Just drink out of the tub.
Heck, maybe if I was thirsty enough.
See, now you got me. Now that seems gross to me.
But it's the same water, isn't
it?
Yeah,
but sometimes when I'm in the tub, the rare times I take the tub, I kind of put my feet up on the tub faucet.
Yeah,
I'll like stick my little toe up there and be like, it doesn't fit anymore.
But what's on your toe that it would?
No idea, but. I don't think anything. I don't know.
If it was good enough for making gin, it's good enough
oh,
for water.
Yeah.
I love the bathtub.
Yeah.
I would hope.
Bathtub water. After you've.
I would think that when all the faucet water goes into the tub, it's rinsing anything out of there.
Right. This also then led to the fact that there's no cups around the office right now.
You're being real hipster.
So
drinking out of a.
I found a vase. The Goodbye Girl, Judy Pilak, redecorated the green room with some old stuff from Goodwill. And I'm sure this is an old Goodwill vase. And I am just drinking water. I filled it up a bit. And this is
I love it.
What I'm drinking out of.
I feel like you should have an umbrella in it.
I could fit a golf umbrella in this thing.
You could. Mm-hmm. I like with the 630s with me.
Yes, they are.
Absolutely no drinking any bathroom water.
Kim's going to restore some sanity for this. Kim, you called us from Kenosha to talk about the blood moon over Wisconsin. How does it look tonight?
Well, you guys are getting very, kind of excited about the whole end of the world thing.
Yeah.
When I was in Kenosha about 45 minutes ago, I came out. It was stunning. It was orange and hazy. But I'm now almost back into Illinois. I hate to tell you guys, but it's back to normal.
Oh
good.
No, the world's not ending.
We won't be the last ones
on. It's a full moon. It's clear and beautiful up there, and it's looking completely normal. So I think we're safe for at least another.
Unless this red moon's a different moon.
Yeah, maybe we have a different moon. Yeah, you never know. Then I'm really freaked out. So, Kim, I know you called to talk about the moon. I hate to put you on the spot. Do you drink tap water, Kim?
You know, I do. I mean, I haven't in the past, depending on where I've lived, because I've lived in places where I haven't had Lake Michigan water. But I
don't get hit by the train, Kim.
I know, right? No, I'm stuck at another freight train.
So, but
oh, so you got time.
I love having this condo in Kenosha. I love the having Lake Michigan water again.
Well,
I really do.
But you drink out of the sink in the kitchen, but would you ever drink out of the sink in the bathroom? Does that bother you?
No, I don't think so.
Right, it's the same thing.
Water, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Same thing. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kim, for setting some reason for this. She called about the blood moon, and then we started talking about tap water. Kim, enjoy your condo
connected.
In Kenosha, and be careful around the train tracks.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
I will. Thanks.
Right. I bet you it's all connected.
They're all pipes. That's what George Costanza's always said.
Oh, I was thinking with the moon and the water and the something.
Mm-hmm.
And the waves, oceans.
219 mentioned this, and I Googled this, too, that blood moons are caused by lunar eclipses, which is not what's happening.
Right. I would say that would be pretty far out. Because when did it happen? Like two weeks
That was
now?
A solar eclipse.
Oh.
A lunar eclipse is when the Earth's shadow is projected onto the moon. So that is not happening tonight. I did look that up because I was wondering.
Did you get excited?
No, I don't.
Did you look at the solar eclipse?
Yeah, I stared right at it. My eyes hurt for days.
No,
it was cloudy here. No,
you didn't see it?
No, I didn't go.
Well, no, because some people went. You could go because people went to the Adler and they saw it.
Yeah, no.
I looked out my window and I saw it was cloudy. I went, I'm going back to bed.
It comes right during my nap time during the day, so.
You know, we didn't care enough to look at this major natural. Right.
By the way, Kim saying that the blood moon has gone away in Kenosha leads to my theory that the positioning of the sun with the earth at dusk is what was projecting the red onto the moon. As the sun was just below the horizon, that was what would cause the reflection through the dust. As the sun goes further below the horizon, it will no longer interact with the dust on its way to projecting off the moon.
We did have a caller just call in and let us know that you can still see it in Rogers Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So the blood moon continues. The apocalypse is not off yet.
Oh, it's just moving south.
Just for us.
Yeah. It's just tightening its scope.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it'll just come right here and then we will still be the last one.
Yeah. It saved Wisconsin. No apocalypse in Wisconsin tonight. Let us know in Michigan, Southwest Michigan, or Iowa.
Or the other 38 states
or Canada. Where is the world ending tonight? All you have to do is look up at the moon. If it's turning red, you are screwed tonight.
And maybe oozing. That would also maybe be a sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it was oozing.
Mm-hmm.
From Sauk Village, the moon is blood red, so I don't know what she's seen. Maybe it's a break in the high-altitude haze. It's solid red from here.
Yeah, and it's a frightening red. It's not even like, oh, it's that pretty orange. No. This is like blood red, banshee screaming from the hills red.
312-981-7200. I mean, it's going crazy on Twitter. People are going on. A lot of people wondering again, is it? It's not a lunar eclipse. No, it is not. But it has to do with the wildfires. But there's been some incredible photos of what's going on. I got a text from the 630. Moon's still red up in Geneva, and I'm only on beer number 5.
No, it may just get redder as you get further into beers.
That's just going to get redder and redder. Hey, but you know, if it is if tonight was the last night, let's just go ahead and go into this while we're doing this.
Oh my.
What are you doing tonight?
Oh, I don't know.
And call us, 3291-7200. Let's say we got 3 more hours left.
Because you know how people are like, oh, I would go with my family. I'd be like, that would take me the entire time.
The drive to Joliet would take you at least an hour and a half.
Oh. And then all it would be is my mom yelling at me about why I wasn't closer. It would probably be that. Like, if you were here earlier, you would have been. I'm like, come on.
Just yelling at you.
We are dying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe just... This is sad. Just go into the corner and just maybe start crying.
You'd cry.
Because really, what can you do at this hour?
And that's why I wouldn't cry.
I wouldn't want to run in the streets because, again, too much time.
Too many people. I don't like crowds.
Right? And I got that
I won't go to Lollapalooza. I'm not going outside during the apocalypse. Trust me. 630 says that they're in Kenosha. They can't see the blood moon. Okay, so Wisconsin, you're spared tonight.
Oh, Joliet's still seeing the moon.
Yeah, that's good
Hoping
news.
For the apocalypse. All right. Is that my mom?
So she can scream at you. 312-981-7200. Let us know if you're seeing the red moon and what you would do if it was the end of the world. If this was a sign of the apocalypse.
That's that kind of thing you don't know what you would do until it happens.
Yeah, I have some gin at home. I've got a lot of gin at home.
Yeah, but
and
how
I would
long?
Start doing that.
See, but we have to be here.
Oh, yeah, because we'd be on.
Because, again.
Well, there's 2 Michelobes in the fridge here, right?
That's right. Michelob Ultras.
Yeah.
That's the thumbs
Run
up.
Run to the Walgreens.
Imagine if that was your last drink, was a Michelob Ultra.
How depressing. Sorry, but Sorry, Michelob Ultra.
Some Schlitz. That's a good final drink. That was the first beer I ever had. That'll be the last beer. A Schlitz.
Oh, that would be a nice.
Yeah, it's a little full circle. There you go. For the end of the world.
And what was the Schlitz slogan?
Boy, I don't know. I had 12 of them. It was
the world out of Schlitz. You're out of beer.
That's right. When
you're
I was
out of beer forever. Too.
When I was out of Schlitz, I was puking in the toilet. That's exact. Yeah, that was my first night of college.
Oh, baby.
I know.
Baby.
We'll tell
John
that story
Hansen.
Another time. Chesterton, Indiana, still red. We are doomed. I agree. Keep on letting us know where the moon's red and what you do on your last night. We got to take a quick commercial break. Then it's news time here on 720 WGN. How much is this for the end of the world? That we're predicting.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Dances at my prom.
In case you haven't looked up at the sky lately, the moon here in Chicago is blood red. I mean,
Except not in Alabama.
Not in Alabama. We got a text from Alabama that it's fine. So they are spared.
Yeah, they're okay.
Alabama, Wisconsin. So far, two states. You're fine.
Yep.
It's going to be the end of Chicago. Tui McCormick took a picture. I'm eating a blood orange as I view the blood moon. Oh, that's nice. Blood orange out here in Oak Park. We're going down.
Very good. Someone let
us know that we're a little depressing. I'd welcome the end of the world and being reunited with loved ones. And bonus, you're not leaving your loved ones. They're coming too. Some of them are.
I just like, they're coming along with you. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Some of them are.
If you're going to go down this road, then there's a song you have to play.
Okay.
Well, all right.
Mm-hmm.
It's most famous. Well, the song was already famous, but it became famous to the mass population because of a movie in the 1960s, Doctor Strangelove.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Remember what the cowboy who was riding the nuke down to Russia? Mm-hmm. Remember the song that was playing in the background?
No, I don't. But I've seen the movie.
Until we meet again.
That's very true.
Don't know when. So if you're going to go down the road of it's the end, you got to play that song. It's the only, that works.
Tom's going to cue it up for the 10 o'clock hour for us. Thank you, David. That's so true. We are going to move on to other things first. We'll get back to the end of the world.
Because history.
It's a big deal. We'll get to it a little bit more in the 10 o'clock in the final hour of the world. But for right now, it's Labor Day, and it's a day that a lot of people enjoyed off, and hopefully you had a great day off. But it's easy to forget the reasons why we have Labor Day off, and the roots stem back pretty far here in Chicago. There's a lot of roots and reasons why we have Labor Day, and a lot of it does stem from Chicago. I think a lot of us, as Esmeralda, you and I were talking, our entry into the late 19th century world, our entry into that is often... The Jungle.
Yeah, The Jungle.
I think a lot of people, Upton Sinclair, had to read that book. But it's a lot more complex than that. And the stage had been set for a long time in the changing Chicago landscape. So better than me talking about all this, we have a noted professor. Richard Shainov is joining us right now. Shainov? Did I mess it up, Esmeralda? Actually, why don't we just get the professor on? Professor, how do we say your last name? Tom totally told me and I forgot.
Schneirov.
I couldn't phonetically smell Schneirov. Anyways, what a great introduction. Professor, you're a noted labor historian at Indiana State University. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad to be on.
So, Professor, I want to spend the next few minutes kind of setting the scene for what Chicago was like as we progress through the second half of the 19th century, the end of the Civil War, and really how, I mean, America as a whole, but really Chicago very quickly completely changed.
Yeah, it is. And Chicago is the quintessential industrial city. That emerges during and immediately after the Civil War. A lot of times we just think of industrialization as separate from capitalism, but actually it became a capitalist city par excellence in this period. And what that meant above all was that large numbers of wage workers were being hired and brought into the city. Most of them really immigrants from overseas.
So what was it before? When you go way back in the 19th century, you're talking about fur traders and traders. So everyone kind of had a piece of their own pie as opposed to the transitions, to what we kind of have now, but even more so just this idea of we're all working for the man.
Yeah, it was very different back then. In the mid-19th century, this was really the high point and the beginning of the decline of a term that historians call the small producer era, when you had the small farmer, and in the cities you had artisans. And people who were wage workers back then were not in a permanent condition. Everyone figured that they had a chance to be a master artisan or a farmer. And Abraham Lincoln stated this very well when he said the poor penniless beginner begins as a hired hand and then saves enough to start his own farm. And this was the ideal, a society of small property owners. And owning your own property meant that you had control of the fruits of your own labor. And this was the biggest single ideal for the average person in America at that time, including Chicago.
So a lot of play for why Chicago became this bustling city. Obviously, you mentioned the influx of immigration, but also this is all happening at the time of the boom of the Industrial Revolution, the connection of Chicago's Lake Michigan to the Illinois River through the canal, increase in agricultural production. So it's a lot of things kind of happening at one time.
It is, and the Civil War is the turning point because... the Ohio River gets closed, and so the pork packing industry moves into Chicago from Cincinnati. And Chicago is also a Yankee city. That is, it was settled by people from New England and New York and that part of the country. And they had a lot of business connections, and that enabled them to kind of outcompete some of the rival cities, like St. Louis and Detroit and Milwaukee and Cincinnati. And then you had the federal government supporting capital investment with a tariff and transcontinental railroad subsidies and so on. Capital markets grow up in Wall Street in 1870. I mean, for all these reasons, Chicago is well situated, better than any other place to take advantage of this shift to a industrializing economy fed by the shift toward capitalism. And and once that happens, you have this massive growth of a working class. And that sets the basis for Chicago being the center of the modern labor movement in the late 19th century.
Professor, could you paint a picture for what life was like for a wage laborer during that time? It's not a pretty picture.
Well, it was very different than today. Obviously, the standards of living compared to today were much lower.
Right.
I would say if you're a working person, you are on the edge of destitution most of the time. You're kind of hustling, what we would call today hustling, but back then it was just the way of life of most people. You could get a job, for example, working in the packing houses, but that was only for the summer months.
Oh, wow. So a lot of seasonal work, yeah.
For the winter months, and then in the summer you'd have to go load and unload ships on the docks.
Mm-hmm.
And then in between you would kind of look for work. So people would work intensely, maybe 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, sometimes, 65, 72 hours a week for months at a time. And then suddenly they wouldn't work at all and would have nothing coming in for 2, 3, 4 weeks. And they'd have to find another job.
And then the pay obviously was not enough to own property. This is people living 12 to a building or 12 to an apartment or something like that.
Yeah, well, you had the tenements, but you also had, in Chicago, you had maybe 30-40% of the working class that did own their own homes. But you never get a majority of working people owning their own homes until after World War II.
So you've set the stage for it. Obviously, these are terrible working conditions for the most part. I imagine that there's not much safety in these places. There's not mm-hmm. workers' compensation, per se. They're not covering your health insurance, anything along those
no
lines.
No regulations, no inspections, none whatsoever. Employers would steal wages. You know, they would start a business, and they would say, you'll get paid in 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks later, they would just close down.
That's what we call internet startups in Silicon Valley now. But so that still exists, but on a little different scale.
Yeah. At least you can appeal to somebody if that happens.
That's true.
There was no appeals back then except the labor union.
So then I got to ask, then how does this not, like, if I was in that condition and a bunch of my friends and coworkers were, and this is the benefit of, you know, living in the era that we live in, mm-hmm. I would be like, yeah, let's rally against this immediately. But I imagine that's such a foreign concept to these wage earners. It takes time for this to sort of gel.
Well, you know, people wanted to form unions then. People want to form unions now. That period in some ways is very much like our period today. It was very hard to form a union, but people wanted to. And what differs then from today is that you had these mass upheavals back then. People didn't have collective bargaining back then, so they couldn't just sit down at the table and have their bargaining representatives talk to the employers and say, we'd like better working conditions, we'd like the 8-hour day, we'd like higher wages. Instead, they would have to go out on strike, and when they went out on strike, they'd have to try to stop strike breakers from crossing the picket lines. And when that happened, the police might intervene, or maybe not, depending on the politics at the time. And if that became a problem, then you might get into a riot, and the riot might turn into an upheaval that might verge on a revolution. And that happened 3 times in Chicago.
And how successful
were
they?
In the late 19th century. And what?
How successful were they?
Well, they were beaten down in 1867, 1877, 1886. And then the biggest one was the Pullman strike in 1894. Mm-hmm. So there were all of these upheavals, in a formal sense, were defeated. But at every time, at every point, at the end of every upheaval, what happened was the political system had to respond, and employers had to respond. Mm-hmm. So let me just give you 2 examples. The employers responded by realizing that just because their prices were being profits and prices were being cut, they couldn't cut wages because workers would go on strike. And so this is the turning point where you get employers, instead of cutting wages, laying off people. So you lay off maybe 10-20%, but you don't cut the wages of everybody. And so that was one way they responded. And the other way was politically. Local mayor Carter Harrison was one of the first, if not the first, major mayor in the United States to respond to the rise of the power of working people by going after their votes mm-hmm. and coming up with pro-labor policies.
So a lot of things kind of have to happen congruently. You have to have, it's like a little tit for tat. You've got to have the rise up, the reaction, the bloody reaction in many cases, and then you've got to see got to have that crafty politician who recognizes that there's votes to be had for certain policies. Professor, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You can stick around for a little bit longer, right?
Sure.
We're going to dive into a few of these more coming up next here on 720 WGN.
AB will be here with the DL on DC.
That's AB Stoddard.
And Washington, DC.
Yeah, that part I got. Okay. And by using social media to find a plastic surgeon, probably a bad idea.
No.
The Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis in September. It all starts again tomorrow afternoon at 3 on 720 WGN.
The Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive patient-centered healthcare experience at their Family Medicine Clinic, Speech Language Institute, Physical Therapy Institute, Dental Institute, and Eye Institute. At their clinics, you will receive quality care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for healthcare.
Folks, when shopping for a home mortgage, how much is great service, low closing costs, and competitive interest rates worth to you? At Townstone Financial, it's priceless. Hi, Barry Sterner, founder of Townstone Financial. Let's hear about the Townstone experience from one of our customers.
Being complete laymen at the whole home buying thing, we were just hoping we weren't going to get taken through the ringer for. You know, with you guys, we felt like we were a priority instead of just another number. We really did feel like we had your guys' personal touch. We could talk to Barry. I mean, you know, any way that it went, if we didn't get you on the phone, we knew that within 15 minutes we were getting a call or an email back. You guys held us by the hand so that we could finish the race, and you guys definitely got it done for us.
Remember, nobody values your home mortgage business more than Townstone. I guarantee it, and I own the company. So call me now, Barry Sterner, at 312-896-2110. That's 312-896-2110. Or go to townstone.com. That's TOWNSTONE.com.
Townstone Financials, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida, Illinois, mortgage licensee 6629 and NMLS 136639, equal housing lender.
Hurricane Harvey hits Texas, bringing apocalyptic flooding to Houston and the Gulf Coast region. With over 7 million people in Harvey's path, first responders are overwhelmed. The Red Cross is there, helping. From Chicagoans to Houstonians, please donate to the Red Cross. It's the fastest and most convenient way to help. Text Harvey to 90999 and $10 will automatically be donated to American Red Cross Disaster Relief. Again, text Harvey to 90999 to donate $10 to the Red Cross. Brought to you by the Radio Broadcasters of Chicagoland.
That's a good one. Nice bump in, Tom Hush. That was very good.
That completely applies to me today.
It absolutely does apply to today. We're talking about the history of Labor Day and its many connections to Chicago and the general labor movement. And we have a noted labor historian. He's got a Wikipedia page, so you know that that means he's a legit guy.
He's legit. He knows his stuff.
Coming to us from Indiana State University, Professor Richard Schnyrov. Did I get it right that time, Professor?
You got it.
Hey, yay. All right. I practiced a few times during the break. Okay, so you kind of set up that, you know, we've got this changing situation in Chicago, a ton more workers, a lot more people not earning a lot. They're living essentially not even paycheck to paycheck, or that's if the paychecks keep on coming. And then we start to see these strikes, and often violent ones. And I think that's what a lot of people might forget. This wasn't just a casual strike, people walking across the picket lines. Mm-hmm. These things would devolve into bloody situations.
Well, you know, the first thing you have to realize is that people were fighting for their lives. People were hungry. Mm-hmm. People didn't have enough to eat sometimes. People were on the verge of getting thrown out of their homes. So when people went on strike, it wasn't just to go from 40,000 a year to 45,000 a year. Mm-hmm. They were right on the edge of things. And then you also have to remember that Chicago was a really rough and tumble place, as many industrial cities were, but I think Chicago more than most. There were a lot of people that were used to hard drinking, used to fighting in the streets, and used to getting beaten by cops and so mm-hmm. on and so forth. And so when violence began to occur during a strike, it could escalate pretty quickly.
And I imagine that what contributes to these strikes, not only the working conditions and everything, but when you start to see economic downturns that affect everyone across the board, that can be a big catalyst sometimes. We see that continuing today, but back in the late 19th century, those were, like you said, these are people already struggling enough. And as soon as you get a recession or a depression, man, things kind of go off the handle.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that point up because it's a really important point. This was a time period, the late 19th century, of depressions. There were more months of depression than of prosperity between 1873 and 1898. And working people were the first to really come to terms with the idea that the so-called free market wasn't really free and wasn't really working. It was dysfunctional. And it was dysfunctional, they said, because working people didn't have the consumer purchasing power to buy back the products that they were making. And this point is really at the core of the labor movement in that period of time and even for today. This is not just about working people getting justice. It's not just about getting enough to eat. It's about building an economy that works for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's really a big idea of the labor movement.
Can you set the scene for the Pullman strike? Because that's really where we start to see, after that, the concession of Labor Day coming from the president. But why don't we set the scene up a little bit?
Well, the scene is the Great Depression of 1893 to 98, and it starts with the failure to market bonds that were financing railroads on Wall Street, and this caused a financial crash, and it percolated through the entire economy, and there was mass unemployment, about 25 to 30% in Chicago. That's pretty high.
Wow.
Jeez.
That's Great Depression era levels, if not higher.
Yes. Well, in fact, the 1890s Depression was known as the Great Depression until what we think of as the Great Depression in the 1930s.
That's kind of like how we named World War I the war to end all wars, and then we came back 30 years later with an even bigger one. But we digress.
Right. That was just World War I now. So things were pretty bad, and, you know, this was the time when Chicago was building the World's Fair, the Columbian Exposition. And all those workers were laid off just a few months after the Depression begins. So you have a combination of the Depression and then all the construction workers being laid off when the World's Fair is completed, the building of the World's Fair is completed. So that's really the backdrop. And then you've got Pullman, and Pullman owns a railroad car manufacturing plant that he set up just south of the city as a separate town. It's not part of the city of Chicago. And he wanted to isolate his workforce from what he considered the bad influences in the city. Mm-hmm. And that meant labor unions, first and foremost. And it also meant saloons. And it also meant he was a Protestant reformer. It meant all these things that would prevent working people from improving themselves, because he was a strong believer in that old ideal, going back to Lincoln, that if you work hard enough, you can make it, and there's no such thing as a permanent working class.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did, however, was he cut the wages of his workers about 33%.
Wow.
Imagine all the listeners what would happen to you if your wages, if your income got cut 33%. Now, for workers in Chicago, it wasn't that bad because their prices that they paid for food and other necessaries and the prices that they paid for their rent, that was also going down.
So there was some deflation to kind of counterbalance, but
it was a big deflation. So, but in Pullman Town, it was very much the opposite.
Interesting.
The rents that he charged his workers stayed the same. And the prices that he charged at the stores in his town, they stayed the same. So it really was a 33% decline in your standard of living.
So then you have the American Railway Union against the Pullman Company, and then you have the federal government mixed in this as well.
Well, and it just so happened that even before this, Eugene V. Debs, who would turn out to be probably the greatest American socialist, formed the American Railway Union because he realized that these small craft unions really needed to be united on a larger basis against the railroad companies. And so he forms the first great industrial union. And the Pullman workers appealed to the union to intervene. And what they asked the union to do was to boycott, since these are railroad workers now that are members of the union, to boycott any rail line that was carrying a Pullman sleeping car or a Pullman dining car. Now, Debs didn't want to get into a knockdown, drag-out fight with the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did was he tried to mediate the dispute. And Pullman said no. Then the Chicago Civic Federation, which included Jane Addams on the committee, the famous Settlement House leader, she tried to mediate, and that didn't work. The mayors of the country tried to intervene and stop this strike from happening. And Pullman wouldn't do it. He said that this would take my property out of my own hands. See, Pullman didn't realize that under conditions of modern big business, that property has a social characteristic, that you can't just treat your company like you would your house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your house you control, and it's okay. But your business, in this case, Pullman's business, affected the lives of literally tens of millions of people, especially because that might cause a shutdown of the nation's entire rail system. But that's what happened.
So, Professor, we don't have a ton more time with Professor Schneirov. I got it that time. By the way, I just wanted to tease your book that you you wrote, Chicago in the Age of Capital, Class Politics and Democracy, Turning the Civil War and Reconstruction. It's a fascinating book. So I guess in just really quickly, 1 minute, if you can, you obviously then have it turns violent pretty quickly.
Well, it does when they bring in troops. I mean, really, the strike, as in most cases, it wasn't the workers that started the violence. In fact, Debs had his men controlled pretty well, and he told them, don't engage in any violence because it might bring in the federal troops. But the U.S. Attorney General, Richard Olney, using as a pretext a small dispute in Blue Island, was able to get a court injunction against the strike, and that brought in federal troops, and then the governor tried to bring in the National Guard to prevent the federal troops from clashing directly with the strikers, and then you had a mess.
Yeah.
And
30 people died, right?
30 people died. Wow. The strike was defeated. But here's the thing, and maybe this is the last point I want to end with. You know, the old idea that everybody should be a property owner, a small farmer or an artisan, that had given way by the 1890s to a new idea that we're going to be a nation of wage workers. The vast majority of people are going to be wage workers. And there has to be a whole new set of policies, public policies. And the key public policy that replaced the old idea of a farm for everybody was now collective bargaining and regulation of the big corporations. And so what Labor Day really celebrates is the shift, a massive shift in the nation's whole way of looking at its economy and at the kind of life that people want to build for themselves.
And it's a battle. We see it today. We saw a fight for 15 happening on the streets of Chicago today. It's a fight, this dispute between labor and management, I imagine, will continue for as long as wage earners are employed by management. So, Professor Schneirov, thank you so much for joining us today. And again, it's Chicago in the Age of Capital, Class Politics and Democracy During the Civil War and Reconstruction. And you can just buy that, what, on Amazon, any place where books are sold?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it used on Amazon.
And thank you.
You can get it anywhere.
A professor advocating buying a used book. There we go. That always helps. Professor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
We're going to take a quick commercial break and then the news on 720 WGN.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when.
Happy last evening of Earth, everybody. Unless you're in Wisconsin or Alabama, the blood moon is out tonight. I don't know if you've been able to see the moon. It is, at least it was bloody earlier.
Mm-hmm. It was frightening.
Right. So we just assume it's the apocalypse coming.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
David did dig around and he talked to Tom over at GNTV, old Mr. Skilling. And David, he confirmed it. It's the wildfires that are making this mess.
Yep, normally in the U.S., the number of acres that go up in smoke is somewhere around 6.5 million or so.
Mm-hmm.
This year's fire season, it's at 7.6 million. And add to that Canada, and they've got about 7.4 million acres of wildfire stuff that's gone up.
Right.
So put all that together over the last few weeks.
Blood
and
moon.
Now you get the blood moon. So it is not the end of the world.
Well,
not yet.
It doesn't necessarily mean that, because maybe the fires are representative of what's going on. Not to make light of it, because it's a very serious thing. But who knows? We've got these hurricanes coming through. Irma's in the coast brewing. It's serious stuff.
Now, if you go back to the old climate change discussion, the warning from scientists for some time has been, because things are changing, you're going to see storms of greater intensity than you're accustomed to seeing.
For sure.
And there is a distinct possibility you're going to see larger wildfires. I mean, California, there used to be a defined period for fire season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, well, it's pretty much all year round now.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we should just stuff ourselves with food and drinks.
I was going to say, if it's the end of the world, David, maybe later you can come on down here.
I didn't say it was the end. It's just, you know, there are some things we need to deal with.
773 says September 23rd. So,
oh, that's the day.
It's a specific day. Oh, so
okay,
we have a little
time.
Time. And if it is the last day, these onion rings from Bell Restaurant are incredible, and we have Aaron and Matt in here to chat about that, the owner and the chef of this brand new restaurant, right? You guys have been open for, what, a week and a half or so?
Yeah, about that.
Here, get really close. Eat the microphone like it's an onion ring. And Esmeralda, you found this place. Is it in your hood?
Well, it's not technically in my hood. I frequent the Avondale neighborhood a lot. I used to work at a bar in Roscoe Village, but it's essentially a hop, skip, and a jump. It's on Belmont, Hungry Brain, but I used to like frequent that area a lot, and it's growing. I love the fact that before there wasn't a lot. There was Kuma's, and then there wasn't much going on there, but now it's just like there's been a huge jump in just restaurants.
Orbit and Room, Honey Butter.
Yes.
Honey Butter. There's a place called Honey Butter?
Fried Chicken.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that sounds pretty
Demon
good.
Demon Tap. And now you guys.
And Reed's Local.
Yes, Reed's.
My partner's place, Joel Hill.
Hi, Joel.
And that's where we kind of met and started talking about putting Bell together. And then eventually, you know, about 8-9 months later, we finally got it going. Something good for the neighborhood, you know, focusing mostly on Midwestern cuisine. Some hometown favorites that a lot of people don't get here in Chicago. So, you know, going out to, you know, the Juicy Lucy, the pork tenderloin sandwich, and then kind of some fusion stuff, what you have over there, the Chicone dog, which is our Skyline chili.
Oh, Cincinnati.
With some homemade sausage, a little sport pepper relish, and homemade mustard on that as well.
It's interesting to combine some of these things together, because when you say Midwest food, all I think of, I'm like, oh, what do we even have here? But when you say all these things, these things I've heard of.
Right.
Obviously, Minnesota with the Juicy Lucy, the Horseshoe, Springfield, Illinois, right? Is that where it kind of comes from? And you can really start to make a restaurant. By the way, if there's any cuisine out there that you want to fuse together, Midwestern food is incredible. I mean, this is some amazing, really health-conscious stuff we've got going on here.
Oh, yeah,
this
absolutely.
Is comfort. We have to bulk up for the winter.
We do got to start bulking up. You guys are at 3188 North Elston, so Elston just south of Belmont, I imagine.
It's right in that little six corner thing.
Yeah, where we get our name. It's B'EL for Belmont and Elston.
Oh,
there we go.
Look at that. Didn't even notice that.
Keeping it local.
The best part about having you guys here this evening is it's your second trip to WGN today.
We thought it was scheduled for 9 a.m. So we got up extra early to make all this food that we brought tonight as well.
Yeah, they don't let me and Esmeralda fill in for Cochran, so you should have known that. But no,
Esmeralda, one of these days.
We were talking today, just, you know, chatting about the show, and then Esmeralda, I get a message from her, it's just, oh no, the food is here. It's 9 in the morning. But we appreciate you guys coming back.
Yes, absolutely. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having us. Glad to be here.
So what, you mentioned the fusion aspect of it. So is there like one specific dish you want people to try that very first time? Or do you treat them equally? They're all equally.
It's a small menu, you know. So if you come in with a couple people, you maybe have opportunity to try everything, you know. Have a little bit of the little bit of the dog, the chili. You can have the steak, the horseshoe.
Yeah, we started with the consolidated menu to get all those items really tight before we start expanding, and so it's pretty limited. But I would say that we stand behind everything that's on there.
I like limited. Nice. I don't like when the menu's
really
too big.
It,
exactly.
So,
right.
Just give me three things you want me to try, and I will pick one of those today.
Yeah. Right.
Because when a menu's too big, I don't like that.
No, it's one, like you said, it's focused, and it's ridiculous when it's like a 3-page menu, and you're like, I don't know, what do you do well?
Daunting. It could be daunting.
Right.
For sure.
That too.
Did you guys travel to these locations to try and find maybe some locals there that really know these recipes, or was it a different investigation process?
Well, some of us are from different parts of the country, so we've had some opportunity to kind of come together and put our best ideas forward, but also to like not do it just as some of these traditional dishes, to kind of elevate them a little bit, put our own little twist on it, and have some fun with it.
Very nice. And you also have cocktails.
Oh, we do.
Oh, they brought cocktails?
We brought some cocktails.
Cocktails.
We brought a couple cocktails that we
have. I have to be up
in
6 hours, but that's okay. Yeah. So put me to bed. Don't pass it over the board. Pass it the rest.
Yeah, we're frightened that something will spill.
It's not you, it's me.
So right there over. Is for you guys to taste. That's our Angry Mule.
Ooh.
We're using a Sovietsky vodka, a little prickly pear and ginger syrup that we make in-house, fresh lime juice,
like,
and Reed's ginger beer.
That is angry.
Very nice. And what's, Heron, what's your background?
I've worked in and out of the restaurant industry for the last 21 years or so. So I've just kind of, you know, started in the kitchen washing dishes, mm-hmm. and just kind of moved up, you know, learning as I went on.
Yeah, and
Matt, working with great people.
Yeah, and Matt, for you, what was your? I know you're the chef,
right? I grew up cooking. My dad is a chef, or he was a chef out in Oak Brook, and mm-hmm. I kind of just would go there after school, you know, and peel shrimp, peel eggs as a little kid, and I would tell my dad, you know, hey, I want to be a chef when I grow up, and he would always look at me and says, "No, you don't. No, you don't." It's oh. But you know it. You know, he jokingly, sort of jokingly, but yeah. You know, it's fun. It's a labor of love for sure. But mm-hmm. I was different restaurants, learning under different chefs. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Bread and Wine, I was there for 2 years up in Irving mm-hmm. Park. Recently, a Dixie Kitchen for a little while. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Fountainhead as well. But I've, you know, cool. been cooking for a while on and off and trying to follow a passion.
I'm not very a foodie nice. In any stretch of the mm-hmm. imagination. So when I hear about some restaurants or we talk about some restaurants, you know, there's a little bit of a nose up in the air sort of attitude to it. What I love about Midwestern food and the comfort food is obviously you're not going to get any of that, no. I imagine, with you guys. But at the same time, there is a refined quality to what you guys do. It's not just you're just throwing stuff in a fryer and seeing what comes out.
Right. Right. We want it to be really nice for everyone. We want everyone to be able to enjoy it. And we want to put that best foot forward. But at the same time, we want to remain casual and be accessible for the neighborhood because we're kind of in the neighborhood spot location and we want to kind of keep that Avondale attitude alive.
Keep Avondale weird.
Keep Avondale yes. weird.
Yeah. And you guys are from, you're in the former Dragon Lady Lounge
yes.
Spot. And if anybody knows that place, I remember she did every Friday, wouldn't she do a Korean, vegan Korean buffet?
She would do a Korean buffet. Yeah, it was great.
Which
it
I thought was insane.
It was delicious.
But it was a great just like a little spot right in the middle of this area where when she was open, there really wasn't much going on except the mm-hmm. beacon of light called the Dragon Lady Lounge. So absolutely. I'm really glad that you guys are like, in a way, keeping it going.
Yeah, for sure.
And keeping you have a drink alive. On the menu, right? Mm-hmm. Named after her?
We do. We didn't bring that one in. It's a little bit. I didn't want it to die. But it's
hey,
delicious.
It's the last night of the world. Little, so we're all going to.
It's
so.
A little spicy and it's a little weird.
Oh, very nice. Well, all the more reason to go to the restaurant.
But I did bring our Pulaski Paloma to you as well, right? Ooh, there.
Is that the one?
Is that the one we've been passing around? That's, yeah. This is gin.
It's no, that one has a little tequila ooh. And Aperol with grapefruit juice, lime juice, and a little honey. And oh. it should be shaken with some ice or maybe diluted with a little water because it's probably a little strong right now. But
no water.
We're good.
I couldn't. Yeah, no water.
No water. No cups. I'm drinking out of a vase.
You
feel
where the flowers go.
Yeah.
We're very easy to please. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the ladies outside of the Showcase Studio want some, so we'll get some to them in a little bit later.
Yes.
It's absolutely. Bell Bar and Kitchen. You guys can stick around a little bit. We're going to eat some of this food, 3188 North Elston. Okay, take a quick commercial break here on 720 WGN. Eat it. 720 WGN, John Hanson and Esmeralda Leon.
It's my theme song.
Filling in for Justin Kaufman here on the second half of the download after Amy and Jen were here earlier.
Exactly. And right now we have Matthew. How did you say it last time? Or was it?
Oh, wait, Mike's
turn
on.
Turn his
now.
Microphone.
Go. Got yeah, it. I got it. Right. I got it. Got it. Wow, that was aggressive.
You want to talk about this food hot bad. Dogs. Matthew Bricks, chef of Bell Bar and Kitchen. We have co-owner Heron Rivera with us. Bell Bar and Kitchen, 3188 North yes. Elston in the Avondale yes. neighborhood.
And what did I just eat? It was a giant sausage.
Mm-hmm. That was the Shikoni dog.
That was a Shikoni dog.
I love that. I like the merger.
Because
we did have, there was a Coney place around here. But yeah, a lot
closed
of people
down
aren't
quickly.
Too. Yeah, a lot of people aren't. Too into it. So I kind of like this because it's like a little bit of a try
little
this.
Bit of both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Try
this of both worlds.
You like it.
So we've been talking about the Red Moon tonight, guys. And by so this food wasn't what you brought at 10 in the morning, too, was it? No, this has been... Is this
no,
fresh?
This is, no, we left that food. Tonight,
this has just been sitting out in the green room for 12 hours.
No, we went back and fired up the kitchen and got you guys some fresh stuff.
Did anyone eat the stuff you brought earlier? Did you leave it out?
There were
no, it went. Come on,
I'm
we're
sure
in a radio
it did. I was
going
to say, you left it here, though, for people.
Yes, absolutely.
10 minutes later, I'm sure it was all gone.
Pete and Jane probably had... Yeah, they plowed through that stuff. 312-981-7200. So we've been talking about the Blood Moon, and it's might be the last day on Earth. But Esmeralda, you sent me this link. Have you guys ever worked behind the bar? Any of you guys?
Oh, yeah.
We have.
Okay.
Yes. Helping out.
Helping out. Okay, so we're going to go through a discussion because someone came out with the 9 things you do, meaning customers, that bartenders hate.
Mm.
So we can talk about these, because you used to be a bad bartender.
I wasn't a bad bartender.
You told me
I just
so
didn't
many
care that much.
That's mean.
You said you were like the worst. No,
I didn't
not
care that
hold
much.
Hold on, hold on.
And it was a shot in a beer kind of place, and I could be as salty as I wanted to be. That was really more what it was.
Those were the fun places.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't bad.
So this is from goodhousekeeping.com. It takes something grand to get you kicked out of a bar. Not in my cases, but that doesn't mean that bartenders don't think about tossing a few people out on the street every night. So here's one I never heard of. Something that you do, and bartenders, 312-981-7200, if you agree or disagree, you order a Guinness last.
Yeah, that's not, no.
I don't get it. What does that mean? Like if someone says, oh, and I want a Guinness, what does that matter?
So, Harold, do you know?
It takes a little time to pour. It's a two-stage pour. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I could see the bartender getting a little frustrated.
So you should say you want a Guinness from the get-go so they can start the pour, make some other drinks, and finish it later?
Yes. I don't know if it's up to the guest to really make that decision.
But the perfect Guinness pour takes 120 seconds or something like that, I think. I was trained by someone who went to the Guinness place in Ireland, the Guinness place, the brewery.
St. James Gate.
Right, and they have a certificate.
Oh, okay.
So
I trust them.
But yeah, no, it's supposed to, you're supposed to do it in two pours, and then you're supposed to wait to let it settle, and it's a whole thing.
Okay, so if you get a Guinness, order that first.
Yes,
and then say, "Hey, here's the other stuff." You treat the bartender like a dog. So if you slam your mug on a bar,
I feel like that goes for any person.
Yeah,
right.
Or like snap your fingers at. I'm not going to respond.
So general life policies that you would do on the street. If you're not going to snap at someone on the street, don't do it.
Yeah, in general,
in a bar.
I think restaurant. You know, my dad likes to anybody. Hey, you. Hey, you, I need that. I'm like, come on, that's not even anyone. Yeah, he's really bad about it.
Oh, gosh.
He goes, hey, give me a beer. And I'm like, they're not even the people we're dealing with.
And your bartender will still smile and say, here you go, sir.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, inside, maybe they're.
No, I wish the bartender would turn around and be like, shut up.
See, that's what I would do.
Yeah, because you're a bad bartender.
I wasn't bad.
Trying to get drinks for free. Does that happen a lot? People are like, come on. Why do they think they've earned that?
I don't know. Maybe just because they just want to see if it works.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a good method for a lot of things, you know.
Well, I think, too, is because they think after a certain point in time, they think they're your buddy.
Right.
Oh.
And it's like, I can get free stuff, right? It's like, no. Mm. You're still just a patron. I'm sorry, but no.
So some of the drinks that we tried from Bell Restaurant, or Bell, it's Bell
Bar and Kitchen.
Bar and Kitchen. Yes. 3188 North Elston. The drinks you made were great, but they probably take a little time to make. And one of these rules says you have to be respectful of rush hour, meaning people ordering fancy, labor-intensive cocktails when their bar is packed. I don't think if that's what they want, that's what they want, right?
Right.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Same.
I guess if they complain that it's too long, now that would be now that would be something inappropriate.
It's like if you ask for a well done steak or something, and it takes it's going to take 20 minutes if it's a nice steak out, and people, why isn't this out in 10 minutes? But
that's blasphemy.
Yeah, but as a bar, you're usually trying to get everything out as fast as possible too.
Yeah, you want more alcohol than you paid for.
You don't know how many times I had people tell me light on the ice, thinking they were going to get more booze. I'm like, there's just less ice.
Anyone ever sent a drink back being like, I can't taste the booze or something?
Many times, yeah. I used to work at a nightclub in Chicago here called the Victor Hotel, and it was pretty frequent that people would give the drink back and say, there is no liquor in here.
Who does that?
Lots of people.
Really?
So what would you do?
I would say, well, you could buy another shot if you'd like to add it on there.
This is don't treat the counter like your personal fruit bowl. Don't eat out of the fruit tray. Has that actually ever happened?
People do that a lot, too.
Whoa.
It's there pretty, are some it's garbage gross. People in the yeah. world.
What kind of it's garbage human being goes to a bar, orders a gin and tonic, they get a lime in there, and then they just see the fruit plate, and they just go, you know, I'm gonna, first of all, who wants to just eat a bunch of lemons and limes?
And well, there's cherries and olives in there, too. So.
I love me those maraschino cherries.
Like, if there's peanuts, I get that. But not fruit.
This no, actually, people do it.
Even if it's set up in the little tray that the bartender has for their, like, mise en place.
They just reach that thing over.
Like, hey, no, it's okay. I'll just reach
over. The thing with the covers, and they just
open it. No, it's okay. I can grab it.
Take the saran wrap off.
Especially if there's some blue cheese olives. People get into those pretty heavy.
312-981-7200. If you've ever eaten fruit at the bar from behind the bar, please call. I promise I won't berate you, but I want to talk to you about some issues that I have with you. This is like when I had people call that didn't use their turn signals. I said I wouldn't berate them, and then I just did. So,
well, you have to teach them somehow.
I've already called them garbage people. All right. So you try to make a deal. They say don't try and make a deal. Mm. You hear haggling at bars and restaurants a lot. Really?
Yeah, occasionally. That's an occasion.
It's like
for
the
me.
Price is listed, and that's this isn't barter system.
Yeah,
this isn't an open market where you're going to buy like a shark necklace or something and want to haggle down the haggle it down or something.
Buy five drinks, get one free. Or something.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, get a punch card.
So this is something I will admit I'm guilty of. Okay, I sometimes make a mess of the coasters. I'm a fidgeter, and I fold it in half, then I fold it in fourth, then I fold it in eighth. I try to, the one thing I never do is put it in the cup because then I know that just creates more mess. I try to just like either put it in my pockets or go throw it away in the bathroom, but I'm sure I've left messy coasters. And all of you had the wide eyes when I were talking about that. Is that something that a lot of customers do?
Here and there for sure. And it annoys a lot of people. I don't mind it so much.
But right.
Well, because you do
I
it
do
a
it
lot.
Too.
You're a fidgeter?
A little bit. I like to tear it. Yeah.
I
like
I do the labels off the beer bottles, too, if I have that. Wow. Yeah, I'm a fidgeter.
You get real into it.
I mean, it's okay, but just clean up after yourself. Or at least make a little neat pile of it.
Right.
Don't just
put it in the fruit thing.
Or just sweep it on the floor.
Yeah, exactly.
The door guy will sweep it up later.
Right.
We had candles in our bar, and people would throw them in the candles. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
That's gross.
Start a fire.
All right, so the last one.
I've seen people try to start fires in the candle. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Garbage people.
The last one is don't try and score a date with the bartender. Don't hit on me. I'm here to work, not date. But, I mean, isn't that part of the perks of being a bartender, right? If it's someone really cute and they want to ask you out, that's fun, right?
No comments on that.
No. Has it ever happened? Has anyone ever asked you out on a date?
Certainly. Yeah, here and there.
Yeah, no, I got
these
it.
Things you
got
have it. Happened.
You were good enough to get date requests, Esmeralda.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
But there's no time to anyway, because it's by the time you get off of work, everyone's drunk and on their way doing something.
Right.
So.
I think they mean for like another night. But anyways, 3188 North Elston Avenue. I've had onion rings. I've had the dog. I'm going to try the steak. We've tried the drinks. Heron and Matthew, thank you guys so much for joining
us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you guys.
You loved your visit to WGN so much. So nice you had to do it twice.
Yes,
so we appreciate
the one.
That. Thank you guys so much. Quick break and plenty more here on 720 WGN. WGN, John Hanson and
Esmeralda Leon
filling in for Justin
Kaufman
on the download. Although I guess now, Esmeralda, you're in normal time because you're still doing the traffic. You're double dipping
double
for this hour.
Double duty.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right. I can handle it.
Yeah, it's a light day on the traffic roads. I begged to do the traffic today.
Yeah, you were like, I want to do it.
Well, I used to be a traffic reporter here, so I wanted to, you know, see if I could still
do it. Well, go on. What does the Edens look like?
Clear 19 minutes both ways from Lake Cook to the Kennedy. Kennedy riding at about 18 from O'Hare to downtown. Ike, okay. No problems on the Stevenson and the Ryan 57 Ford Freeway in and out of Northwest Indiana. Looks good. Sorry.
Were you just saying words?
Yeah.
But kind of just sounded you were going I-57 Bishop Ford.
I was just saying words. we've been talking about terrible things that people do at bars, and Glenn in Oaklawn wants to let everyone know that he also tears the labels off the beer. I had heard that means you're sexually frustrated. Someone told me that once.
It's not just fidgety?
I think it's just fidgety.
Right. I honestly, I don't mind because I do it too. I rip the things out. Just don't make a mess. Just don't leave everything scattered about. We're not your mothers.
I can't get over the fruit thing. I cannot get over the fact that someone would reach over the bar and eat the fruit that's meant for drinks.
Because they see it. Because a lot of places don't, they might not even have that little tray thing. They just kind of have cups.
Plates or cups, yeah.
And people, yeah, they just feel wink, wink.
No, at least ask.
Yeah, because they will, you know. They could give you a few, or ask for a drink with some of those in there.
I'm a gin and tonic. I just want the lime. But...
extra lime.
So the 815 says that as a bar and restaurant worker, all I can say is nothing that the public does is shocking anymore. People can be awful and ignorant, and I kind of asked for like the worst thing, and this person responded that honestly, a strange guy touching way more than he should under the bar while not breaking eye contact with a female bartender.
Under the bar?
Well, he was like... touching. He was being really inappropriate.
Wait, but with... Oh.
That's like against the law, man.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not good anywhere.
That's true garbage people.
Like, that's...
Yeah.
No.
Bar.
Oh, my gosh.
Restaurant. This was a family place.
Ooh,
not
yikes.
Even close to a nightclub. Even a nightclub.
Yeah, that's... No, nowhere.
There's nowhere good for that.
Nowhere.
Mm-mm.
Yikes.
Yeah. So those things happen at bars and restaurants. I guess that one didn't make the list because it goes without saying.
Right.
Don't touch yourself
no.
at the bar.
The one thing that I hated was... because of what the bar was. It was a beer and a shot place.
Mm-hmm.
People would come in asking for margaritas. And I'm just like, sorry, guys. There is no fresh juice here that you're... I don't know what you're thinking. This is not Margaritaville.
Did you have sweet and sour anywhere or something to throw it together?
Yeah, but a margarita is not sweet and sour. That's
okay.
Just kind of... Mm.
Yeah.
Or if they would ask for bombs. We were not...
Like an O-bomb or something?
Yes, like
okay.
The
Vegas bomb?
Yes, like all that stuff. I would tell people straight away. I had one who kept asking for different bombs, and I went, we don't make bombs here.
Okay.
And then they would ask for another. I'm like, we don't make bombs here. We don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I guess it's up to you guys, what you guys want to do and don't want to do, and so...
Well, because it makes an enormous mess.
Yeah, and it's just not what the bar is, so that makes
right,
sense.
Right, that too. We're not... I'm sorry, but...
So, speaking of annoying things, this one caught my eye... It's a Washington Post article, which is shocking in and of itself.
So that means more than one person is doing this, I think.
Right. The headline is, my girlfriend and I meow at each other. And it's not as unusual as it sounds. My girlfriend and I meow at each other. 312-981-7200, your thoughts on meowing or baby talk. But let's get into this.
Do you meow at
your
significant other?
Do you meow at your significant other? So coming home late on a Tuesday evening, after hours of reporting and running errands, I, and this is Matthew Sadaka of the Washington Post, he dropped his bag right at the door. Settling into a seat at the kitchen table, I turned my exhausted gaze to my girlfriend, who was sitting at her laptop. When she looked up, I could tell she was ready to begin the daily recap of who we called, what projects we accomplished, and how many buckets we sweated on the subway. Except that's not how our conversation started. Meow! I wailed mournfully.
Oh, wait, he did it.
He started it.
Oh, what?
And then she responded sympathetically, meow. And then he affirmed with a huff, meow.
It takes all kinds.
So over the past few months, this writer's girlfriend and him have developed their own way of communicating that would turn heads in public. Sure it would. We speak cat to each other. Not all the time, of course, but what started as the occasional meow, an initial I'm joking but not really litmus test of how much weirdness a relationship can handle, it has furballed into a regular means of expressing ourselves. Part of it, I think, is it feels good to let out a great meow. Kind of like in yoga, and I get this point here, where you go, and you feel one with yourself and the universe, and that noise signals something in you that makes you feel good.
No.
But really, each feline vocalization confirms that my girlfriend, the writer's girlfriend, accepts and shares one of my most absurd habits. And I think there's something to that, the idea that you are a little quirky in this one way, and she or he, depending on which way you swing... which cool cat you like, does something that way. And really, we're pawing at the issue here yet, but I got to know, 312-981-7200, Do you engage in any sort of similar behavior? Or did you at the start of your relationship? Because the article goes on to explain that, as the headline said, that they're not alone. It turns out there is a psychological explanation underlying this couple's tendencies to meow at each other. That's according to Rosemary Sokol Chang, an evolutionary psychologist at State University of New York, and also an evolutionary biologist at the Kinsey Institute. They are researching this. So there's another couple out there that they talked about that honks at each other.
Like honk, honk, honk.
This is a couple back in Houston when this writer asked his mom about the meowing. I don't know why you'd ever bring that up to your parents. I would leave
right?
that
They'd
one
be like,
alone.
Oh, sweetheart.
Sweetheart, no. Mm. No more money. when he asked his parents about that, which was probably upstairs because this guy, I assume, lives in his basement and just calls upstairs. No, I'm just kidding. He's a writer for the Washington Post. I shouldn't say that. She directed me to her colleague, the mother did, who often communicates with her boyfriend by honking at each other to signal that they were done with a fight.
What?
So the idea came from her parents, who would imitate penguin sounds at each other when they wanted to call it quits on an argument.
What is happening?
So if you ever watched the David Attenborough nature documentaries, mm-hmm. you hear the...
Yeah, but I wouldn't be...
And the penguins are monogamous, and they mate for life, and so if the penguins do it, why don't we do it? So after a few months of dating, this couple tried and successfully adapted the practice into relationships. They called it, by the way, the guy's name in this relationship, his nickname is Goose.
Oh, boy.
When I felt like I don't want to fight anymore, I just honked at him. And at first he looked at me like I was nuts, but now it's a thing. So there's cat speak and there's penguin honking going on. And this is where we get to the psychological explanation. Our tendency is to coo and call our partners. Infantilizing pet names is apparently not unlike parents speaking in baby talk. So the pet names thing, I think we've all done, right?
I've never been a pet. No.
Never me, even, like, just, it starts
my
to...
My girlfriend gets mad at me if I do pet, like, I do it to bother her.
Really?
Yeah, but usually, you know, just, I have first names and stuff, and I think it's because both of our parents didn't really baby talk to us. We didn't really have that experience growing up, so I guess it's not an instinct.
Maybe that's what it was, maybe that you didn't have the baby talking.
Yeah, I don't have serious nicknames. But I'll sometimes be like, hey, boo-boo.
Yeah.
But it's just more like a joking.
Yeah.
Not a real straight up, hey, boo-boo. Or like when people call themselves babe. Mm-mm. I'm not into it.
I call Brett B or boo a lot.
I usually do it in like a
I don't do it matter of factly. That's just a nickname I have for him. But it's not like a baby talk. It's just a nickname now that I have for him. One of my first relationships, we somehow devolved it into burbs. And then it would turn into burbsy pants and all that sort of thing. We were that couple.
Goodness gracious.
Obnoxious. Obnoxious.
Yes. Yeah.
So our tendency is to coo them. And obviously you could relate to the Seinfeld character Costanza, who, of course, his stomach turned at the idea of the schmoopy. I don't know if you remember that. The squealing baby talk. But apparently it happens. So the research shows that tonal expressions, these things, are something that become comfortable to people. That baby talk becomes a bonding strategy. But the animal noises is interesting. So a professor of communications at Kent State who specializes in communications to figure out if the girlfriend and this writer are venturing into a relationship dialogue deep end, he assured me that meowing is pretty not concerning. He says people develop in long-term relationships. They create words. So that'd be like burbs or burbsy pants, codes, and these mannerisms that are unique to their relationship with that specific person.
Well, that's just noises.
Right, but it's just that's what it is. I think what he's saying is not that I'm trying to act like a cat around you. I think this is what has manifested, this very natural need to communicate kind of like this in baby talk or whatever form it takes. Mm-hmm. Theirs has just manifested themselves into cat meowing.
Now, I wonder when the penguin honking happens right. in fights, are these, what kind of fights are they? Because what if there's a serious fight and you're over there going, honk, honk. Like, really?
Like, honey, we need to talk about whether we're going to have children.
Yeah. Honk, honk. Like, no.
Oh, apparently
what?
That's the end of the discussion.
Oh, we're done now.
Oh,
okay.
We're done. You're going to honk at me? See, that would raise my blood more if
exactly?
I got honked at.
How dare you honk at me?
Mm-hmm. I also want to let them know, and I think I finally found it in the article, Esmeralda. Mm-hmm. These people don't have a cat.
See, what?
That's the other weird thing. I thought the cat would be a part of the communicate. Like, that they have a cat, they like cats, okay. Maybe they do like cats, but the meowing was just part of that.
Mm-hmm. See, I have a cat, but I just talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'll meow back at me or do something.
Right, so yeah, and that's what, yeah, talking to your animals, I think, is pretty normal. Anyways, we're going to continue this conversation after the break, perhaps. I want to hear from you guys. 312-981-7200. Join the conversation. Is this something you've seen that you think is weird? Do you do that with your partner?
Yeah.
Is it animal noises? Do you honk at your partner? Or do you do the baby talk? Because there's actually an interesting discussion about the baby talk and how it kind of wraps up in relationships. We'll get to that and plenty more after this on 720 WGN. What's new? I see. 312-981-7200. We're talking about a couple, a writer for the Washington Post and his partner who meow at each other. Not, I mean, jokingly, I guess, but more affectionately would be the word, right?
It's not jokingly. That's not what it sounds like. It sounds like they're communicating through meows.
Yeah. We had a text from the 630. They are bat crap crazy and they need mental or emotional help. You don't freaking meow to another human.
I mean, you do, but, you know, I wouldn't use it as my form of communication to them.
Right. Wait, do you meow at other people? Like if it's an attractive person? Meow.
No, no, this isn't 1920s. I'm not a cartoon wolf. I know my tongue doesn't fall out either. You make noises and stuff, but it's mm-hmm. never anything to actually be serious about right. something.
So people dive in a little deeper to this, and they say that people that do employ cat speak or honking or baby talking, a lot of times that just represents comfort in a relationship, that people that when they meet each other and that mm-hmm. they're able to kind of peel back the layers, they do that.
I could see that because you start, you know, once you get comfortable, you start to do some weird things
right
around them or things that you wouldn't necessarily do in a fresh relationship because you think, oh, they're going to think I'm a weirdo.
Another friend of the writer, and I think he's just got a weird group of friends. they when they're alone, her and her boyfriend, they become full-on dogs,
what
making nuzzling dog sounds and pawing at each other for attention.
I mean, I kind of, you know, you kind of do that. You're like, and then you make little whiny
See?
Noises. Yeah, but I'm not like full out dog Ooh. Things, like roar.
Like Scooby Dooing your way to a little action or something. Yeah.
Like, no.
I think I would be justifiably kicked out of the house
yes.
if I did that.
She'd be like, you're a dog, go out into the yard.
Yeah, this is interesting. Okay, so. Again, it's a sense of total comfort or vulnerability or something that feels very innocent. It's a sweet language that you know intellectually is inappropriate, mm-hmm. but there's some safety with this person that you're comfortable being vulnerable.
Well, I could see that.
Right, but the dog thing is a little weird.
Yeah, dog noise.
If the connection between parentsies and loveries is correct, eventually the cat speak and the relationship will become less frequent. So a sex researcher, which is a great job title, I want that on my business card, at the Kinsey Institute, said that based on her research, participants in more loving, trusting, supportive, exciting relationships were more likely to be baby talking with their partner, but it seems that this is only true in the early stages of relationships. So that lovers, I think that's how they say what the speak is.
Okay.
It declines as bonds between partners are cemented. So it's something
really?
That happens early in relationships, not right away.
See, I would think this would be like when you're maybe a year in.
Now, I think that you would start talking like cats after 3 months, and then after like 6 months, you'd be like, what the hell are we doing? We need to stop this. But I've noticed that in my relationships is that in that, yeah, that 6 month to 1 year range, you are employing all the baby talk. You're getting to know each other. You got the nicknames for each other, but then they sort of fade away.
And it just turns into,
isn't that a little sad?
I guess, because it's like it kind of sounds like you're trying too hard.
I've come all the way around in this. I feel like I hope these people talk like cats to each other for the rest of their lives. It's true love.
Aww.
Right?
They're like twin speak.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's why they call it puppy love, you know?
Oh,
boy.
Yeah. The dog one's a little weird for me.
I honestly imagine them like crawling around and
in
just
like morph suits, like
oh
as
my
Dalmatians.
They're just wearing like big like the right. big masks.
Right.
Oh, and, man. That's a whole other conversation.
And hey, everyone's entitled to their fetishes and whatever right? you want to do.
Yeah, no, it's but hey, man.
Maybe it'll go full blown out. I don't know. All right, now I need a follow-up article to this one. He wraps up by saying it's odd to think that our cats speak, which has become such a regular part of our relationship that it does accidentally slip out at parties and bars, will someday decline. Although there may be dozens of cat-loving couples out there who speak like this with each other, we're the only one that understands what our meows mean.
Oh, and by the way, the 630, I am inspired to try the meowing thing. We have fostered many kitties. And maybe it's a more effective way of communicating the totality of the day than words. Wow.
630, please immediately, if you are partnered up or have someone, yeah. please talk to them like a cat now. And in the next 6 minutes, let us know how that goes, how that immediate reaction is. Because it's got to be that first time you go,
You go, what, excuse me?
Pardon?
Are those words? No?
I also like the slip out of the bars because that would be.
What do you mean?
Oh, like your friends. I mean, that's something they're going to talk about for days.
Right. Because if you do something on telephones a lot, or you're repeating a phrase over and over again, mm-hmm. I would sometimes answer my phone that way. So I wonder if that happens, you know, the bartender asks you, what would you like? And you go, meow. I'd like a meow.
Comment is, if my husband meowed at me, I would contact a doctor immediately.
Or a vet.
Whoa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Zing.
That was better than my joke I was going to make. That was woof.
What were you going
to
do?
I was going to say the woof. I was going to say woof because that's what we say to things, and that would be dog speak. Mm-mm. Breaking it down. 312-917-200. Do you meow at your partner, or do you bark at him, or do you honk at him or her?
I'm still on this whole honking like penguins to stop fights.
Do you scratch them behind their ears?
I don't, but I imagine that behavior would start to
manifest itself. Or scratch their head.
I scratch heads.
Right, or pet their heads.
I do the pet, you know.
Or massage their head.
Mm-hmm. There's some animalistic behaviors that happen in the right. bedroom. Well, I shouldn't have, I mean.
All right.
There go beyond.
Thanks, John. Yeah.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. And it involves petting, but no, it doesn't. Okay. That's going to, we're in safe harbor, right? 312-981-7200. Oh, what was I going to say? I had one last little thought on that.
A pun?
A little button. Nope, not to put on that one.
Dogs, cats.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, if it starts to morph into other animalistic behaviors, like feeding people in bowls, like if you and your partner, because I know in the world of, don't want to go down this too much, but mm-hmm. in the world of fetishes, that mm-hmm. is something that some people engage
right.
in. Right. Where there's something called puppy love. I'm going down a road.
Okay.
I'm sorry to bring this up.
For the podcast.
Look, yeah, this is for the podcast after the show. And there's nothing wrong with it or anything like that, but there's certain subsets and certain groups. And
yes.
I know people that do puppy. I think it's called puppy play.
Hmm.
But that's way further than this.
Well, we have the 708 is bringing it kind of back. Who doesn't give the puppy dog eyes to show emotion?
That's true. You just did it right then. You kind of cock your head to the side.
And then you do the lip a little bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very sweet.
Then I also like I just called my husband, meowed, and he hung up on me. I mean, yeah, wouldn't you? You'd be like, I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Meow.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on. That could be the theme pretty much for the entire evening. Don't know what's going on.
What?
With talking about the story. And I just went into a really long diatribe off to the side, which I probably get a letter. Stephanie Menendez is going to call me tomorrow.
People will actually write letters to you about it.
Right. Okay, so we're just about done wrapping up. The one thing I wanted you to reveal, because Esmeralda, mm-hmm. you often tell me about how you forget to wear deodorant.
Oh, yeah.
You have a solution for people out there, because people often ask about this, because every time we bring up the fact that you always forget that you're not wearing deodorant, other people message the same thing, so you have a solution for them,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. So what you do is you put a hand sanitizer. Put it on your hand. Slap it on your armpit, done and done. Because it's alcohol and it kills the bacteria. You got to let it dry and all that. But yeah, that's pretty much all you got to do.
Hand sanitizer, fragrance free.
But not after you've just shaved.
Well, why would
you have forgotten at that point? You're still in the,
you're still remembering.
We're only human.
You're
still in the I could do this phase.
Yeah. Not in the domicile there. Yeah, I guess if you're doing that. So that would do it. And the alcohol also evaporates the sweat.
Yeah, smart.
So I guess this is if you're in the office and you're like, hey, Bill.
Or if
you got that hand sanitizer, mind if I use that really quickly?
Right.
And he thinks you're going to, you know, do it right over your hand.
Underarms a little damp.
Slap, slap.
Walking around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. Top tip, guys.
This has been fun. Okay, we're going to take the world's shortest break here. We got a little bit longer one, and then we'll get to the news here and wrap things up here on 720 WGN. Why Esmeralda's meowing at me? What, I'm trying to do my job here, Esmeralda, and you're
meowing. I'm trying to communicate with you.
What were you trying to say?
I was going to say if you wanted that ginger beer.
Oh, that was the important thing, that we were coming back from commercial break? All right, it's turning into a 70s lounge in here, which means only one thing, that Patty Vasquez has walked in the
Thank
door.
Thank you for saying 70s lounge and not bordello or it looks... Yeah, no, guys are coming here...
1870s is what 18, I was referring
to. Yeah, that might be...
You always bring in the lamps.
I do.
Do you do it every single night?
Every single night. I can't stand these lights. These lights are mean, and
they
feels personal.
Yeah. You know, I never realize it until we see your lighting, and then mm-hmm. I want that lighting.
Well, you should just go into the green room and take those. You know, Judy Pilak, the Goodbye Girl, mm-hmm. brings in a lot of cool stuff
from
Goodwill.
I've already raided the green room because I couldn't find any glasses here, so I've been drinking water out of a vase. I washed it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish
no
I'd given
cups
you
cups around here.
I wish I'd given you keys in my office. I have so many bar glasses in my office. Yeah. Oh yeah, I have a.
Is it just because it's Labor Day around here? I think everything is.
Well, we could have easily gone upstairs and gotten you a cup.
Okay.
Yes.
There's that too. But
I thought it was funnier to use a vase.
We're just real lazy, and we.
Who was producing your show?
Tom Hush.
Tom Hush is doing 7 hours of producing in a row.
Yeah.
Look at what? Him.
Wait,
Marathon
Tom's
man.
In with you too.
Yes.
Oh,
look at that. He's the Iron Man.
He's got two Michelobes in the fridge over there. That's all he could offer me. I asked him for water, and he said, I got two Michelobes.
Yeah, those are mine. You could have had one.
I got to be up in like 5 hours.
Ultra? You didn't want to Ultra?
Yeah, no, I did not.
It's not even a thing. It's just like, it's just watery.
What does Ultra mean?
Ultra light, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Ultra terrible.
Ultra, okay.
Low calorie.
Ultra the
Allegedly
worst.
Allegedly low calorie.
Patty, do you meow or woof at anyone?
Do I meow or woof at anyone?
Anybody.
No, I don't meow.
In relationships?
No, but I do goat noises for people sometimes.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
but not to communicate with your husband.
No, I don't.
Now, what does that mean? What are you trying to communicate through that?
No, it's a story I tell about using goats for the wildfires. You guys were talking about fire season.
Yes,
they use goats in California to eat all the dry grassland and the shrubs.
Oh.
And
they do that in Ohio, that news though, is too,
next. Now they do. They use them for landscaping now, too.
I should get a goat.
Okay.
For manscaping?
Yeah.
I
don't. That got weird. See, really
interesting. Yeah.
That's how you know it's my show.
Yeah. Hey, I transitioned nicely. About 4 minutes ago, I was talking about puppy play, which is a fetish in certain communities.
Oh, sure. Everything's a fetish.
So I think the news is next.
I do not meow or woof at my significant other.
That's good. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.